They run to the answer.
Terry and Mike?
Let's have they run. James.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
So, I have to be honest, you don't look prepared for a run. I gave the topic, you know, you turned up, you don't look ready to go for a run to Gaza. We're taking our thoughts this morning from Acts chapter 8, so you might want to just turn there. And what we're really going to do is just, you know, often we turn to Acts chapter 8 and perhaps we talk about baptism. We use it in baptism talks. We look at the process. We as Christadelphians, it's a key chapter for us to use to show, of course, the two of them go down into the water, supporting our ideas around adult baptism and full immersion and all of that. Today, we're looking at this chapter from a different perspective, really, because we're going to consider Philip and we're going to consider the eunuch, and we're going to imagine their journeys. They're each on different journeys. Let me just pull this slightly towards me so I can see. Obviously getting old. So, Philip is a new recruit, actually, isn't he, on the list. We meet Philip first back in Acts chapter 6. And at the beginning of the chapter, you might remember that there's some complaints. The Grecian Jews are complaining that they're not very happy about the way that their widows are being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. And so there's a very practical, logistical thing to sort out about how this church is going to work with so many people becoming converted, so many people wanting to understand more, so many people to teach, so many people to support. It's not working. And so they come, verse 3 of chapter 6, "Brothers, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word." So Philip is picked out as one of these 7. One of these people who, what was the description? Who was known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. That's our introduction to Philip. And his main job then was to deal with a logistical problem. Distribution of food. There he is listed amongst them in verse 5. So the first thing actually Philip does when we're into chapter 8 is that we find that he, around verse 4, has gone off to Samaria. Verse 5, Philip went down to a city in Samaria and proclaimed Christ there. So he's off. He's gone to Samaria. Now think about it. Is that surprising? I think it's interesting in its own right, at the very least. Philip has gone to Samaria. What would you find in Samaria? Samaritans. And think of that for a moment as this church is starting to spread. How we're only into early chapters of Acts here. We haven't yet got, of course, to Acts chapter 10, where Philip has that, Peter has that vision. And he's told he's got to go to Cornelius, and he's got that mind sort of adjustment to do to realise, so this message is as relevant to Gentiles as it is to Jews. But here already, Philip is off, and he's up in Samaria preaching to Samaritans. Of course, Samaria was a place that would usually be avoided. If you wanted to go sort of above it, you'd often go around the whole place to avoid it. And remember the time when Jesus was there, went through Samaria, and in fact, for some reason, decided to send his disciples off to go and buy food so that he could meet that Samaritan woman by the well. Do you remember? Interesting. How many disciples does it take to buy food? All of them. Why did Jesus have to send all of them off to go and get food? And I think it might well be because they weren't ready for this, to see this message going to the Samaritans as well. What's happening here is that Jesus is saying, look, the message I bring, this gospel, this good news, is as relevant to you and to Samaritans, and a little bit later, of course, to the Gentiles as well. Shown that so powerfully. Philip seems to have no problem understanding that, and he's off up there in Samaria. And in fact, it's going really well there. Verse 6, when the crowds heard Philip and saw the miraculous signs he did, they all paid close attention to what he said. With shrieks, evil spirits came out of many, and many paralytics and cripples were healed. So there was great joy in the city. Great joy is this gospel message, this tangible message of hope and joy reached these people and changed their lives. People who previously were avoided from this kind of message. Now, Philip, of course, is just like you and me. He must have loved seeing the impact of that gospel. God bringing so many people to him that he could help, that he could work with. Such a powerful and so much response. Logically, I think it would have made sense for him to stay quite a while, perhaps, in Samaria. It's going well. But that wasn't what God had in mind. And God calls Philip and wants him to go, verse 26, go south to the road, the desert road that goes from Jerusalem to Gaza. Now you're Philip. You're in Samaria. There's so many people coming to you. You're changing the lives. This is the early days in Samaria of this message landing. So much to do. And God says, brilliant, really great, it's going wonderfully, but I want you to now go to that desert road over there. You know that road where there's absolutely nothing? You know, where you won't meet anyone. Philip's going, how does this make sense, God? What do you want me to do in a desert? But look at his reaction, verse 27. So he started out. And isn't that a little bit like Abraham? Abraham, I want to take you. I want you to get up. Immediately, he went. How many times do we find people who make themselves so available to God? Isaiah is another one, perhaps, the same way, where he said, here am I, send me. As opposed to Moses, who says, does it have to be me? Initially. And that's the reality, isn't it, of God working with us in our lives. And the question is, how available are we to God to go to places that seem logically, to our understanding, to make no sense? God, why on earth do you want me to be in a desert? There's no one in a desert. But Philip went. And on his way, he met an Ethiopian eunuch. So let's think about that. Let's think about this Ethiopian. This is a wealthy, powerful person. A man of importance, as it says. An important official in charge of all the treasury of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. Maybe, you know, this is a very wealthy person who has anything, if you like, at his disposal. He's in a nice chariot on the way back. But far more than all of that, he is a man who is seeking. He's a man who has questions. He still has unanswered questions. It tells us, the end of verse 27, this man had gone to Jerusalem to worship. And on his way home, was sitting in his chariot, reading the book of Isaiah the prophet. Actually, can you just tell me, how many corner shops are there in Jerusalem where you can go and buy a scroll to take home with you to Ethiopia? I mean, this man is a man, maybe he even took the scroll with him. Perhaps he already had it. Maybe he went in with his questions. I mean, if you had questions, if you were seeking answers, where would you go to get answers? I mean, Jerusalem would be a pretty good place to go, wouldn't it? He clearly had gone to worship. And yet, you and I know that as a eunuch, he would not have been welcome. He would not have been allowed in. He would have been kept at a distance. And so here he is, I would suggest, returning from Jerusalem, either having acquired a scroll or still carrying his scroll, but certainly still having his questions, still not really understanding, still seeking, still searching. By the way, although we often think that, and it may well be true, that the eunuch means castrated, it is also a title that is used for faithful servants or one of great importance. It doesn't necessarily mean what we normally associate with that. It could mean literally minister of finance, for example, or chief financial officer, perhaps, to put it in today's sort of company speak. But certainly, regardless of that, of what the word actually means, we are told and left in no doubt that this is a man of quite high education and learning. He could read Hebrew, for example. He's reading a Hebrew scroll. We don't know, actually, and some people will debate if he is a Jew or a Gentile, but here he is coming from Ethiopia, coming from far away, a place that was a long way away from Jerusalem in terms of the gods that they worshipped. But here was this man who had chosen to worship the God of the Hebrews and was able to read this scroll even though it didn't mean much to him. Pretty impressive guy, isn't it? Really. So let's just piece that together for a moment. Here is a man who doesn't fit the normal mould as far as those in Jerusalem are concerned, of somebody who should find God or who God is looking for. He walks in with questions, but he doesn't fit. He stands out. He's different. Are there any equivalents of that in our lives where we perhaps see people and think, oh, they won't be interested, or it's not, the message isn't for them? I don't know. No implied answers here, just some questions. By the way, the reason that they did castrate people, of course, was all about protecting the bloodline, especially for somebody as important as this, who was working so close within the very centre of the organisations in Jerusalem, within the church, if you like. It was all about ensuring that that bloodline was not polluted. That bloodline which was going to give them the Messiah. The very thing that, of course, Philip was able to reveal to this man, that he'd already appeared in the Lord Jesus Christ. So the eunuch might have a senior position, but he's mutilated in a way to make sure it cannot affect the purity of that line, because so much of the Old Testament and the way the Jews were was all about trying to remain pure, wasn't it? Think of the clean, unclean. You can't touch a dead body. If you've done this, you've got to go through this process, da da da. There's so many things, all about remaining clean and pure. A desperation to stay pure. Again, it's worth us just reflecting about that for ourselves, for our communities, and just think, are we as desperate to stay pure for other reasons? Maybe we see it in a different way in our lives today, but what is the pollution in our churches? How broad is our church culture? When you look around you, if everybody looks the same as you, if everyone's the same sort of social, ethical, etc. standing in life, then why is God only calling people like you and me? How diverse are we? Have we taken this message to people who don't fit that normal mould? Again, no implied answers here, just questions, just for us to think about, because what Philip is going through here is a huge sort of transformation. And Philip seems very available and keen to learn that message, perhaps more so than Peter, who took longer in Acts 10 to realise this message could go to the Gentiles as well. And so, this Ethiopian is reading from Isaiah. Do you understand what you're reading? Philip asked. How can I? How can I understand this? Unless it's explained to me. And it says, verse 32, the eunuch was reading this passage of scripture. He was led like a sheep to the slaughter, and as a lamb before the shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. So that's Isaiah 53, isn't it? So let's just read Isaiah 53, if we can.
Isaiah 53 from the Right Standard Version. Who has believed what we have heard? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?